This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. Welcome to my podcast. I am a dental division director at the incredible, and I say that with no trepidation, the incredible CPA firm of Ide Bailey, and I am based out of Southern California. And I am recording this podcast on Thursday, November the 7th, 2 days after a presidential election, 2 days after an election where we were voting for 100% of the members of the House of Representatives and 1/3 of the Senate. And I am thrilled to have my good friend, who is our Director of Legislative Affairs here at Ide Bailey, Mel Schwarz, who comes on with me every year before the end of the year, to talk about what this election means to tax policy. So when we get started, I'm going to kind of set the table for Mel. We're going to talk about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and what does it mean for year-end tax planning for 2024 and tax planning for 2025. Maybe you're thinking about selling your dental practice. Maybe you're thinking about selling a piece of real estate or some stocks. You talk about, you know, usually our podcasts, we record them and we publish them a month or two later. Well, I can be very current with you. The day after the elections, the Dow Jones Industrial Average went up over 1,500 points. So I was just looking, the Russell 3000 average is up 20%+, about 20%. So everybody's portfolios are up this year. You know, when do we sell? Do we sell and all this? And we're not giving investment advice. So we got a lot to talk to Mel about, which I will get to in a moment. First, I want to tell you that with everything going on in a change in government and changes in tax laws, we have your back here at Ide Bailey. Please, if you are not getting good tax advice from your CPA, if your CPA is not on top of everything that's going on, and we're going to talk today about equipment purchases and pension plans and tax rates, and you know, Mel is as close to all of this as anybody I know, please give me a call, 657-279-3243, if you would like to have a year-end tax planning session and talk about where you're at, or email me at awiederman, that's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N, at Ide Bailey, E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. I am also excited to announce, it's public knowledge, it happened actually yesterday, that Ide Bailey's Wealth Group has merged with Sequoia Financial Group. They are out of, I believe, Akron, Ohio, an incredible company. And if you are not getting good financial planning advice, nobody is telling you when are you going to be able to retire? How do we transfer wealth from your generation to your kids' generation? How do we fund for college? These are all things that are very passionate to me, and I'm excited about that. we also have your back. I have worked with our wealth group, and they do an unbelievable job in putting together financial plans. I've worked closely with them on plans for our clients, and we get into some really cool stuff. And probably after the first of the year, we're going to have them come on and talk to you about what we do. One other thing I want to share with you folks is this BOI reporting. And I've been talking about this for the last 2 or 3 or 4 months on the podcast. So earlier this year or last year, I think it was, the government decided that anybody who owns a business, we want information. We don't have enough information. So they created a reporting form that you have to do, and it is being monitored, the right word would be executed by the FinCEN group in the government, which is the same group that takes care of foreign reporting. So if you have a foreign bank account, you have to report on a FinCEN form that you file with your personal tax returns. So here's what this means, folks. If you have an entity, and the rules say if you have an entity that has to report with the Secretary of State or that has a connection with the Secretary of State, but I would say any entity that you have, you need to take a look at whether you have to do this reporting. If this entity that you have was formed before the beginning of 2024, you have until December 31 of 2024 to file this form. If you formed an entity in 2024, you have either 60 or 90 days, depending on the rules, to report. So all I'm going to tell you is I would put into my search engine BOI reporting, and it should get you to the FinCEN website, which has a bunch of frequently asked questions. The penalties for not doing this are, let me use the same word that they use when they talk about hurricanes, catastrophic. They are catastrophic. Please promise me that you will do that.
Be sure to check out our new Ide Bailey podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
All right. Well, with that said, I want to get to what is very fun for me is talking to my really good friend, Mel Schwarz. Mel, the great thing about this CPA firm that I have become a part of in the last 5 years is that, as I've explained before, it's kind of like you being a private practice dentist and having John Coyce, Frank Spear, Gordon Christensen at your fingertips for just any clinical issues you have. I have a gentleman who you're going to hear from here shortly who has got the ear of congressmen, senators, people in Washington that are in the know. So with that, Mr. Mel Schwarz, welcome yes. to the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. How you
well,
doing,
thank
man?
Thank you, Art. I'm doing well. It's an exciting time here in Washington, D.C., and I'm
you mean
glad
there's stuff
to have
going
an opportunity to talk.
You mean there's stuff going? I mean, I just thought it was pretty quiet the last couple of days.
Well, it is. Yeah, sure.
Right. I know. My friends tell me I'm delusional, and I know that's the case. All right, so let me set the table. Let's start off by tell us what you do at Ide Bailey.
I am responsible for it just sort of keeping an eye on the activity, particularly the legislative activity on the tax side within Washington. I've been, I joke that I came here on a one-year tour of duty in 1984, 1984. With the old Arthur Young firm. A few of you may be old enough to remember when there was such a thing as the Arthur Young firm.
I interviewed with Arthur Young. Yep.
And it is just never went home. But my excuse is I married a local, and once you do that, you never go back. In any case. But I have spent the time since 1984 following the making of the sausage at least the making of the tax sausage here in Washington. Spent 6 years on staff up on Capitol Hill with the Joint Committee on Taxation, which is the nonpartisan staff that we worked for both Democratic and Republican sides, and were involved consistently in developing the actual language that goes into the Internal Revenue Code. So not only keeping an eye on how that develops, but also trying to help people understand what the myriad words that have found their way into the code mean, or what the myriad words that seem to be threatening to make their way into the Internal Revenue Code.
So what you're saying is that if any of my listeners don't like what they see in the tax code, they can blame you, right?
We're not going to talk about the specific provisions that they can blame me for.
No.
But
just the whole thing. Just the whole thing.
The whole thing comes at some point. That's right.
All right. So let me set the table for this discussion. All right. So, and folks, let me preface this by saying, if you've listened to my podcast, which is now going on 6 years, I do not talk politics. I will not talk politics. I am respectful of everybody's political position, and we don't get into this. But I'm going to talk politics to the extent of giving you factual information. As of 2 days ago, Mel, or November 5th, on January 20th, we will have a Republican president of the United States, former president and president-elect Donald Trump. We are going to have a United States Senate that I believe is at the moment, the last numbers I saw was 52 Republicans, 42 Democrats, and six contests that are up in the air. So we will have a majority in the United States Senate for the Republicans. As of right now, I'm looking at my phone, according to from the Associated Press, at the moment, there are 435 seats in the House of Representatives. Majority is 218. Right now, according to the Associated Press, 210 seats have been called for the Republicans, 198 for the Democrats, which means that there are 408 called, which I'm required to do math because I'm a CPA. That means that gives me 408. There's 435. So that's 27 seats left to be called. The Republicans would need another 8 for a majority. Okay. So let's start the conversation off by, we know we have a Republican president. We know we have a Republican Senate. And we don't know the House. So let's start off. What happens, Mel, if the Republicans take the House of Representatives on the tax law? We have the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Let's start with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and all that.
Regardless of who wins in the House of Representatives, the Republicans or the Democrats, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, this was the legislation that was passed back in 2017 under the first Trump administration, is going to be job 1, 2, 3, 5, 10, and 20 of tax legislation in the coming year. That is, that's what's on the table. That's what's going to be discussed. And of course, the reason that is because primarily the tax rates, whether they be applied to individual rates or whether they be applied, for instance, to the estate tax system, are scheduled to those tax cuts are scheduled to go away at the end of 2025. And legislation that will preserve most or all of those tax cuts is what Congress is going to be focusing on. I think likely for the bulk of 2025, whether it's a Republican House or whether it's a Democratic House. Now, how the process plays out could be very, very different depending upon whether it is Republican or Democratic. Let's assume that the Republicans are able to obtain their majority and that that's a large enough majority that there's not one or just one or two members that can throw the monkey wrench into the works anytime they want. Then the focus is going to be, I really believe, on what you might even consider a pure extension of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, particularly the Tax Cut and Jobs Act rates. So we would not see rates decline at our rates go up beginning in 2026. And that is with regard to, regardless of what your taxable income may be, we are not going to see a reduction in the amount of the estate tax exemption. We'll allow see that to continue. And we're also, I think, also going to see a continuation of the system that we saw in the change in 2017, which was to move a larger group of taxpayers off of itemized deductions by giving them a significantly larger standard deduction at the price of taking away the personal exemptions. That change seems to be pretty much accepted by both parties at this stage. So I think that kind of structural idea, we're not going back to the old days of 15 years ago where there was a small itemized deduction and you got a deduction for each individual in your household. Where the new system of a larger standard deduction and no personal exemptions does look to me like it's something that's going to be made permanent.
Let me jump in and just share some numbers.
Yes.
So if the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act sunsetted at the end of 2025, we would go back to a standard deduction for married couples filing jointly of $16,525. And we would go back to a personal exemption of $5,275. If the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is extended, and again, as we say, if the House goes Republican, that's a probably likely, Mel?
Yes.
Okay. Then we have a standard deduction that is grown by inflation every year, and that for 2026 would be $30,725. It's a little lower for 2024 and 2025. So that has taken away the need for many people to itemize and things like that. So if, let's talk about what if, because right now the Republicans have an 8-seat majority, I believe it is, in the House of Representatives, because Representative Johnson is the Speaker. Do I have that right? I think it's 8 seats.
It's 8. It varies because there are a couple of empty seats.
Right.
So that is, but they have a narrow, just sufficient to say it's a narrow majority.
Okay. But if they don't, if the Democrats take the House, what do you see happening with all of this?
If the Democrats take the House, then this is going to—it's going to be a much slower process as far as trying to restore. There does seem to be an overall commitment that there will not be an increase in the, at least in the tax rates for married couples that earn $400,000 or less, and that they seem to have locked that in. As to whether or not there would be a increase in the tax rate for the very, very top, or whether there might be something that has been referred to as a millionaire's surtax, that is a possibility. But I think even with a Democratic House of Representatives, that is relatively unlikely. The strength here is all pointing in the direction of a fairly full extension of the tax cuts, the tax benefits that were put in place in 2017. And that's the direction that the train's running. And it would be particularly if the Democrats have the majority in the House, it will be a very narrow majority. It will be very difficult, I think, for them to withstand withstand legislation that would ultimately, although it has to start in the House under the Constitution, it's very easy for the Senate to take virtually anything that the House passes, declare it to be a tax bill, put their tax version in, and then send it back. It is something that we're really looking at a high likelihood, I think, a full extension of the TCJA.
Yeah, and anything that is going to tax wealthier people, like an increase in the capital gains tax, like an unrealized gains tax, considering that Donald Trump is president, I don't see him signing anything like that. Do you?
Well, now
maybe. I mean, unless there's the horse trading that goes on.
The problem here is if they don't pass anything,
right,
the rates automatically go back.
So they got to do something.
So you
got
to do something. Yeah, you can't just say no. I veto.
Right.
Because if he vetoes, effectively we get eventually a $4 trillion tax increase.
Yeah. So they've got to work together. And there will be, as there has been since 1776, there will be horse trading, right?
There will be horse trading. Particularly, there's going to be horse trading, I think, once we get past the basics. The basics are the rates. The basic are the estate tax exemption, and that is that's going to be pretty solid. Now, what additional? I mean, President Trump has talked about has laid out a number of interesting proposals during the campaign. Some of those may be considered. Some of those may be considered and enacted. Some of those may be considered and fall by the wayside. Well, but that, I think, is where you're likely to see some of the horse trading you refer to take place.
So since you brought this up, and we were going to cover this regardless, I want to cover what President-elect Trump has talked about. And I also want to talk about what the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and some of the specific things regarding my dentist listeners. So I'm reading off an article from MSNBC. One of the things they're talking about is no tax on tips. Now, that does not affect dentists. I've been in a dental CPA for 40 years, and I've never heard of anybody tipping their dentist. I mean, who knows? By the way, of my thousands of listeners, if any of you have actually received a gratuity for doing really good dental work, send me an email and I will mention it on the next podcast. But so no tax on tips may happen, may not happen.
Tax on tips is certainly I don't think it's going to happen in the dental profession,
No.
When they talk about tax on tips, they're really talking about, the $5 that you leave on the table at the diner, and which is may or may not be reported as taxable income right now. It was included in the proposals on both Republican and Democratic side. There is, I think, some general interest in trying to fulfill it. It is likely, if it does move forward, to have some fairly significant guardrails that would say that it really is limited, probably to the kind of food service, maybe the casino, some of the other areas that you think of in terms right now.
Uber driver, taxi driver.
Yeah. Where cash tips are a normal part of the process. But there are some issues underlying issues with respect to that. It's fairly easy to say that, okay, you exclude that from the income tax. The problem comes in with regard to whether or not that is also going to be excluded from employment taxes.
Right.
And because of the nature of the nature of the way that Congress may need to deal with enacting the tax legislation. They do not have, the Republicans do not have a 60-vote majority in the Senate. So they would either have to convince some Democrats to come along with them, or else they need to use a process which is called budget reconciliation. And budget reconciliation essentially allows them to get around the rule in the Senate that it only takes 51 votes to pass something, but it takes 60 votes in the Senate in order to take the vote to determine whether or not you're going to pass something. This is right. The filibuster.
Right.
And you can avoid the filibuster with a budget reconciliation system. However, there are a lot of guardrails in budget reconciliation that deal with Social Security. Yes. And so anything that could be seen as negatively affecting the Social Security Trust Fund, like no longer requiring you to pay employment taxes on your tips, could potentially trigger objections on that basis. I think there is politically a lot of support for the idea of excluding tip income. But again, does it make sense to exclude tip income only for income tax and then try and still tax it for Social Security purposes? But if you don't do that, then you run into problems with the budget reconciliation process. So
yeah.
That's one that I think you kind of hold off, and we will have to wait and see how that one plays out.
Okay, so President-elect Trump has talked about eliminating taxes on Social Security benefits.
Well, that one really does affect Social Security because there, the income tax that you pay on your Social Security benefits does directly go into the Social Security Trust Fund, and so that one would raise significant questions with regard to the ongoing viability of the Social Security system.
So a little history about Social Security real quick. When President Roosevelt and his friends passed the Social Security Act in the mid-1930s, one person was paying in for every one person that was withdrawing. Now, I believe the statistic is that one person pays in for 10 people that are withdrawing. We have lots of baby boomers. So the Social Security Trust Fund is scheduled to run out of money. I believe the date is 2033, so about 8 years from now. So anything that is going to reduce that Social Security Trust Fund is going to come up with some opposition. So we have that. President-elect Trump has talked about scrapping taxes on overtime pay. Same issue, right?
Exactly the same issue. Again, you want to exclude it from the federal income tax. That's one thing. But are you going to exclude it from the employment taxes as well? Now we've got a Social Security issue. Does it make sense to require something to be accounted for one way but then take it out of the other system?
Right. He's also talking about potentially creating an auto loan interest deduction.
Well, now that one at least doesn't affect Social Security because
exactly. Please, I'm eligible. No, I'm eligible in about a year and a half for Social Security. Okay, remember, since you're responsible for all of this, you have to make sure that I can get my Social Security. Once I get mine, I'm good. Okay.
Well, that's the idea. Is that once you start taking it, then you should be okay. I think that the whole auto deal, we're just going to have to wait and see on that one.
Now, the one thing that we do need to talk about is this. If the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is extended past the end of 2025, the Tax Institute, according to the Tax Foundation, a full extension of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act could decrease federal revenues by $3.5 to $4 trillion over the next decade. You and I were talking before the recording, and we're not going to get into a deep discussion of this. We are in the mid-30 trillions of debt at about 150% of GDP. So that's not a good place to be. So I think that our legislators are probably talking about how to mitigate that. And we were talking about that they can extend the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Because isn't it true, Mel, that most tax legislation, if it cuts taxes, they have to find revenue somewhere else, right?
That has traditionally been the case, that tax bills, Congress tries to make tax bills what they call revenue neutral. In other words, there is an increase on one side and a reduction on another side. Because the TCJA tax cuts automatically go away in the absence of legislation, simply extending, just leaving us where we are today, as you say, estimated to cost potentially as much as $4 trillion over the next 10 years. There is discussion on Capitol Hill of saying, we realize that, we're concerned about that, but we believe that tax policy is what our current system is representative of tax policy. And so, yes, we're going to need to find some saving. We're going to need to find some cost cutting. We're not going to talk about tariffs today.
No, we are not. Unless you want this to be a four-hour podcast.
There is. President Trump has promised that there's some tariff money coming. They'll take that into account. So we may not be talking about an overall increase in the federal debt of the full $4 trillion. But there is a real push for the idea that the tax bill should not have to offset the cost of continuing current policy. And current policy is the current rates. It is the current size of the estate tax exemption. It's the current availability of the pass-through deduction. That is important for anybody who's operating really as anything other than a subchapter C traditional corporation. And then, to the extent that you want to talk, that Congress decides to talk about other provisions, including the things that were proposed in the campaign by President Trump that we just mentioned, those may have to be offset. And so there may need to be looking at other provisions in the tax code that would increase federal revenues to offset any losses that are attributed there. But we're not going to have to find $4 trillion of additional taxes in order for Congress to extend what is the current policy that's in place.
Okay, so let's get into now, what does tax planning look like for 2024, 2025? We know that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is good for 2024 and is good for 2025. So for this year, we have, folks, the lowest tax rates that you're ever going to see in your lifetime. I remember we used to have something called an earned income tax when I started doing taxes in the 80s that had a maximum rate of 70%. The maximum tax rate right now, Mel, is 37%, and they keep indexing it. So that 37% bracket doesn't hit until about $725,000 of taxable income. So to get to that 37% bracket is hard for most of my dentists. The ones that are making a lot of money, obviously they will. The ones that are making, $150,000 to $400,000, my dentists are in 22, 24, maybe 32%. That's really low marginal rate. So for 2024, that's not changing, right?
That's not changing for 2024, and it's not changing for 2025. So we're not focused necessarily on moving money moving income between 24 and 25. The issue becomes as we get into 2025, we need to be following the progress of Congress to see, you know, how close are they to succeeding in extending what we've talked about, the TCJA, extending the tax rates that we're currently enjoying, extending the system that we currently have in place, so that we can look with confidence as to whether or not we need to be concerned about a shift that occurs from 25 to into 2026.
So what that means, doctors, is that for 2024, the strategies that we're using, you know, let's talk about, obviously, if, you know, if you're in a high bracket, you want to defer income to next year. Maybe you'll be in a lower bracket, so you've got to talk to your CPA about what bracket. You know, maybe you're retiring in 2025, and maybe your income will be lower in 2025. Maybe you're selling your business in 2025. I mean, we have some folks that are selling their dental practices, and we have actually, we did an analysis for one of our clients, and we could close 24, 25, and we found out that they saved $28,000 in federal income tax by deferring to 2025. Plus, they have, because they're not going to have a whole lot of income from running their practice. Plus, they're going to have another 16 months to pay the tax and hold on to the government's money. So these are the strategies that we talk about all the time. So the rates, maximum, the rates go from 10% to 37%. The standard deduction, again, Mel, if it's going to stay for 24 and 25 in the high 20,000s, and we want to tell our doctors to, you know, we get a $10,000 deduction for state and local income taxes and real estate taxes, right? That's not changing for 24, 25, right?
Correct.
Okay. So if
that's not changing for 2024. Let's leave it that it is not changing for 2024. Whether or not there is a change for 2025, I think my personal assessment is it's doubtful that we're going to get a change for 2025. But that is an area that there is going to be some debate. And depending upon the timing for legislation that deals with the TCJA, the extension of the TCJA, we may or may not see a modification of that $10,000 limitation. And that modification, if Congress is able to deal with TCJA in the first part of 2025, we could see a change in 2025 with regard to the state tax deduction. If it takes them the entirety of 2025 to avoid the otherwise scheduled increase at the end of 2025, then I think we're talking about 2026. And this is something that may or may not ultimately find its way into the legislation.
And if you live in the 41 states, folks, that do have a state income tax, and someone has not talked to you about, in California, we call it the AB 150. In most states, we call it the workaround. If you're an S corporation, there's a way to work around this to get your state. I'm not going to get deep into that today. But the bottom line is, Mel, what you're saying is we want to watch what happens, because that might determine when we pay our state income taxes. So we have
definitely
to
definitely determine, because remember, we as professionals, but we are by and large on the cash method of accounting. It's when you pay something is when you deduct it, if it's deductible. And that is so something that is you do definitely want to keep an eye on. You definitely want to watch and see how that develops.
Okay, so let's talk about equipment purchases. Now, we know that bonus depreciation will be gone by 2026, and that does not change if TCJA sunsets, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, it's phasing out 80, 60, 40, 20, and then it's gone, right?
Right.
Okay, so any talk about extending bonus depreciation?
Yes. The expectation is that when they extend TCJA, when they extend the rates, when they extend the other provisions, an attempt is going to be made to at least lock in the 2024 number, the 60% bonus depreciation, and possibly go back to 100% bonus depreciation. Now, this is one where it really does, you really are asking, I think, with regard to the crystal ball, because under the current rules, we're going to go from 60% depreciation, 60% expensing in the current year to 40% if the property is placed in service in 2025, and then down to 20% in 2026. So do we continue to accelerate the investment in fixed assets and take advantage of the 60% that at least we can claim this year, if we can get things into service by the close of the year, as opposed to risking the decline to 40% that we're likely to see is scheduled to be the case if that investment goes into is placed in service in 2025.
Now, one thing I want to point out, folks, this is not necessarily we're talking about tax changes. I want you to be very, very careful, and we've talked about this on this program before. If you are an S corporation, which many of you are, okay, in order to take a deduction for something, an equipment purchase, a retirement plan contribution, you've got to have this thing called S corporation basis. We're not going to give you a course on basis. Here's what I'm saying to you. If you have close to a zero basis, which most of you do, and you buy a Cerec machine for $150,000 and you place it in service on December 29th and you take a five-year loan on it, there is a very good chance that you will not, repeat, not have sufficient S corporation basis and not get that write-off. So you need to be very careful. Again, if you are going to look at equipment purchases at the end of the year, which is a great way to cut your taxes, you need to call your CPA and say, if you're an S corp, do I have sufficient basis to take a deduction if I buy it this way? Now, if you're a partnership or an LLC, that is not an issue generally. But if you are a corporation, an S corp, it is very important. So our normal tax planning, Mel, is accelerate deductions. If I can save a dollar of tax today, I want to save it today, and I'll worry about tomorrow. So given that we're not going to lose a lot of, there's not going to be a ton of changes, 24 to 25 maybe, we want to go along the same route. You know, accelerate deductions, defer income, that's what we're looking at. Now, that folks, yes, that does not mean you put 4 weeks of receipts or 8 weeks of receipts in your drawer and deposit them January 2nd. That is not allowed, period. Okay. So anyway, all right, let's talk about this estate tax exemption, which is a big deal, because if the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act were to sunset and someone passes away, we are talking about anybody with a net worth of over about 6 million. Is that about the number?
That's about right.
Right. So if you have a net worth of over $6 million, which is very realistic for those of you that have done good planning and have saved and invested in your business and your real estate and a dental office building, you know, that is an estate problem. But if the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act are extended, that would bring it, leave it where it is, which is about almost close to $30 million for a, if you do the traditional AB trust, husband, wife, things like that, right?
Correct.
So we want to make sure that we take a look at what's going on with this. We talked about equipment purchases, capital gains rates based on what you know, even if the house becomes a Democratic house, capital gains rates stay in the same?
I think that that is likely to be the case. But again, keep in mind, some of the benefits are scheduled to go away at the end of 2025. So we are going to need the legislation. The expectation is that legislation ultimately will preserve the current capital gains rate.
Okay. And so basically, folks, again, at the end of the year, you know, if you have capital gains, you want to harvest any losses. Now, again, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the day after the election, the markets went up 3 to 4% in the major indices. So I don't know how many losses you have, but if you do, you want to harvest your tax losses before the end of the year and offset them against capital gains. Defer income, accelerate deductions. Again, I'm looking at playing the rate bracket. If I am in a 10 or 12% rate, I'm not looking at accelerating lots of deductions because maybe you have a practice that just started or you just bought it and it's down a little bit and then it's going to come up next year because you're doing a lot of good stuff with a consultant and marketing and I'm going to be in the higher rates. Then I don't want to accelerate deductions in a year that I'm in a lower rate. Right, Mel? I want to push income into this year. And push deductions. So maybe equipment purchases, maybe you started a practice or you're starting one at the end of the year and you're in a low bracket.
The equipment purchases themselves have pushed you into an artificially, temporarily low taxable income situation.
Right. If you're in a very low situation, maybe you have some individual retirement accounts. Consider doing a Roth IRA conversion, right?
Something that is always there and available.
Correct.
We've not heard a lot. We did not hear a lot about retirement planning in the election, and that does not seem at this stage to be a strong focus from incoming President Trump. We know that there is a lot of interest in improving the retirement structure. Within Congress itself. And so we may see some additional opportunities to, particularly for those of you who are willing to share retirement with those working in your office to put additional monies away. But that is, again, something I think that we have to wait and see how it develops.
Now, I'll tell you what, they have raised, with Secure 2.0, you don't have to take your required minimum distributions until you're 73 years old. The catch-up contributions go into $10,000. I mean, if you have a profit-sharing plan and you want to go from a simple IRA to a profit-sharing plan and you put your spouse who helps you in the practice, you can get to almost $100,000 just with a profit sharing plan. That is significant tax savings. For those of you who do not have a retirement plan, who are in paralysis because you're, oh my God, the government, and I don't know what's happening, and it's a new government, and there's uncertainty. Folks, money does not go bad when it's invested in the bank. It doesn't, it's not like a banana or a peach. It doesn't rot, okay? So I would encourage you all, if you have a simple plan, figure out, maybe you're paying off a big loan. Let's take that loan money and put it into a retirement plan, a profit-sharing 401k plan. If you're near retirement, 3, 4, 5 years away, you practice doing really well, a cash balance defined benefit plan is a wonderful way. We've used strategies, doctors 3 years from retirement. I used one doctor, $150,000 a year for 3 years. And then when he sold the practice, we hit $400,000 into the retirement plan. Do you know how much money we saved that guy? I mean, it was very, very fun. So Mel, it looks like and it's funny, I was afraid. I scheduled the recording of this podcast for the 7th. And I was kind of torn as to whether to wait a little longer. But, I was very, very pleasantly surprised, as I think many of us were, at how quickly the results of the election came. I mean, notwithstanding 35 races in the House, I mean, we pretty much knew the results of the election by the time we woke up on Wednesday morning, right?
That's correct.
And that was very, that's kudos to all the people in the volunteers and the people that run the system to get the technology that we have here in 2024 to do that. So fortunately, our conversation is a lot more fruitful as opposed to, well, I don't know who's going to be president. And by the way, I don't know what's going on with the Senate and, you know, the House. We don't know yet. We should know in the next couple of weeks, we hope. The last thing we'll talk about, what is the timing of all of this conversation? I mean, you and I talked before we came on the air that it's not going to happen in the first 100 days. I think President-elect Trump and the new Congress, they got a couple of other things that are maybe a little higher priority.
Well, they have other things that are priorities. Whether they're higher priorities or not, I don't know. But it's going to be difficult, again, as I said, because unless they are willing to add provisions that will bring a certain number of Democrats along, they are going to need to use a process called budget reconciliation in the United States Senate. And that is, it's virtually impossible to push legislation through that process within the first 100 days of an administration.
Right.
And further, there is, because as we talked about, there seems to be this sense that, well, we're going to have a policy baseline. We're not going to make the tax guys offset the cost of extending the current tax system. We may need to talk about paying or offsetting the cost of other provisions that are considered. Well, it's likely to be we're going to have one big tax bill in the next 2 years. So if you're going to look at some of the provisions that, for instance, incoming President Trump said that he wanted to look at during the campaign, it may be that you hold the or that you take some time with respect to the legislation, tax legislation, in order to consider those provisions. And finally, the rates don't expire until the end of 2025.
Right.
And so to do it in the first 100, I mean, you're asking Congress to get something done 9 months before they have to do something. And when was the last time Congress did anything 9 months before they had to do something?
No. So let me tell you, I've been in taxes. Never. I've been doing taxes for 44 years. Okay. And I will tell you, as I recall, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act either on the 17th or the 22nd of December. It was right at the end of the year, and it was very, very close. So imagine, and again, you know, this is not all about me, even though this whole podcast is all about me. No, I'm just kidding, folks. Here's the deal. Imagine doctors, my clients, who many of you listen to my podcast, your year-end meeting is December the 6th. So what happens? They pass a major tax legislation bill 2 weeks after we have our year-end meeting. We do all of our planning. We write the year-end memo. And now I've got to call you again and say, oh, crap. Hey, Joe, guess what? There's a new tax bill. They did it 1 year. It passed on the 27th of December. You know, at that point, you just have to say, throw your hands up and say, I can't help you anymore. So I hope, for the sake of the American people and the sake of we poor demented CPAs, that they, whatever they're going to do, don't do it on the 27th of December. Give us some time so we can work with it, right? Anything else coming down the pike, Mel? I mean, we've talked about everything, you know, business as usual, defer income, accelerate deductions if you're in a higher rate, you know, watch what they're doing. The biggest thing is watch what they're doing. Watch what the legislation looks like. And anything else coming down the pike that my dentist might need to know about, or we hit all the high points?
I think that these are the things that I would stay focused on, because I think this is what Congress is going to be focused on with regard to taxes. I guess one area that is, there has been some discussion, is whether or not some of the incentive, some of the green incentives that were included a couple of years ago. I think Trump did at one point say that he would repeal those the first day he is in office. Now, of course, he can't. Congress has to repeal. He can't repeal. And here we're talking about the idea that if you've got your own building and you put solar panels on the top, you get some credits. If you are going to put a heat pump system in for air conditioning, particularly if you're actually building something new, there can be some very, very significant green tax incentives that you may want to be looking at taking advantage of. The anticipation is that a lot of those are going to stay in place, but if that's something that you have a mind to do, that is something that I would try and get started ideally by the end of this year, and certainly by the end of 2025.
I'll tell you what, again, I love Ide Bailey. I love working for them, and I love the knowledge that we have in our firm. I got to go to lunch about a month ago with, I believe his name is Joe O'Neill, who's one of our partners, and all he does is tax credits. And he was talking to one of our clients about buying and selling tax credits, which is it's not illegal or anything like that. It's something we talk. And his knowledge of tax credits is stupid, ridiculous. So doctors, if you are thinking about, you're at the end of building a building, you're at the end of remodeling a building, you've got any kind of green incentives, Mel is very, very much correct. And again, we're not getting into politics. Incoming President Trump has indicated, just like Mel said, those provisions that are there now may not be there next year. Has nothing to do with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So if you can get a tax credit, remember, a tax credit is a dollar for dollar reduction of your taxes as opposed to a deduction, which maybe saves you 32 or 24%. So a credit is much, much better than a deduction. If you can finish something, remember, doctors, everything you do has got to be placed in service. It doesn't mean that if you're going to do this new heat pump and it costs $40,000, you can't just write a check for it and then, oh, just go ahead and install it in March of 2025. It doesn't work that way. So the bottom line is give a call to your CPA. If you're not getting answers, give a call to our folks at Ide Bailey, and I'll give you out my number here at the end. Mr. Schwarz, it is so much fun talking to you about this stuff. I just love it. It's just you have the insight and the knowledge. And here's one thing that I think you and I can't agree upon. 2025 is going to be a very, very interesting year around the Beltway. And you're going to be busy.
I think I'm certainly anticipating that. Look forward to our talking again as things develop.
We will absolutely talk again. So Mel Schwarz, Director of Legislative Affairs of Ide Bailey, thank you so much. And please stay with me as I take the podcast out. Appreciate it. And ladies and gentlemen, again, if you need help, again, while we do have approximately a $1.8 trillion deficit projected for this year, plus who knows what, and $35 trillion of debt, my job as a tax planner is to increase the federal deficit by cutting your taxes legally. And that's what we do at Ide Bailey. If you need some help, if you're not getting the answers you need, if you're getting a call on April 13th that says you owe $75,000 and you didn't know about it, and you're not meeting with your CPA at the end of the year and they're not doing a detailed projection, call me, 657-279-3243. A Wiederman, AWIEDERMAN at IdeBailey.com. Make sure that you, I didn't mention this at the beginning. I was so excited about talking about taxes. I forgot our wonderful partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. 140 CE courses for a very, very, very reasonable price. They have been my partner in this podcast journey for 6 years. Go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. and make sure you look up the BOI filing requirements on the FinCEN website. And one more thing I want to mention is that if you're in Southern California, we are doing live transition seminars Saturday, February 22nd. And for people buying dental practices, we're going to have a lawyer and a consultant and the bank to tell you what you need to do to buy a practice. And on Saturday, March 1st, we're going to have a seminar for sellers of a dental practice. We're going to have my dear friends from McLaren and Associates who have been on this podcast. Should you sell to a DSO? We don't recommend one way or another. We always ask, why? What's your why? And then we'll talk about whether that's the right thing for you. And, you know, what are the we've got some sophisticated tax strategies for that. With that, folks, I want to thank you for the honor and privilege of your time, as I do every single week. I want to encourage you to tell your friends all about our podcast. Please subscribe on your where you get your podcasts, on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And with that, I will call it a podcast. This has been Art Wiederman, CPA, for the Art of Dental Finance and Management with Art Wiederman, CPA. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Ide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman@idebailey.com. That's awiederman at eidebailly.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.